DUP MP Sammy Wilson has backed Boris Johnson after he attacked Theresa May's Brexit plan. Mr. Johnson said the Prime Minister had, quote, wrapped a suicide vest around the British Constitution. In the Mail on Sunday, the former Foreign Secretary said the Chequers deal was feeble and pathetic. Our BBC political correspondent, Enda McClafferty, with us today. Good morning to you, Enda.
Morning, Stephen.
Set this out for us.
Well, I'm sure Boris Johnson this morning is perhaps thinking that his media strategy over the weekend has worked, Stephen, because we're not this morning talking about his personal life or his marital difficulties. We are very much focused on that article he had in the Mail on Sunday yesterday, talking about his strong objection to Theresa May's Chequers plan. And the focus very much, Stephen, as you've already pointed out, is not so much on what he said, but on the language that he used, talking about Theresa May and the backstop proposal. In his view, what it essentially has done, as you say, has wrapped a suicide vest around the British Constitution and has put the detonator in the hands of Michel Barnier. And he's trying to use that analogy to describe how much Brussels now has the upper hand in the negotiation. And that's where his frustration lies. But it has been interesting to note, Stephen, that much of the criticism directed at Boris Johnson over the weekend and once more again this morning is around the language that he has used, as opposed to the substance of his article over the weekend, which essentially was saying that the UK government has handed the initiative to Brussels.
And has there been much reaction from Downing Street? I know that some big players have come out to criticise him, Enda.
Yes, some big players within his own party. A lot of Conservative MPs are across many of the front pages of the newspapers this morning attacking Boris Johnson because of the description that he used to talk about that Chequers plan. But we also get an insight this morning, Stephen, from those who are very much in the Boris Johnson camp, talking about the fact that there are some maybe 80 Conservative MPs out there strongly opposed to Theresa May's Chequers blueprint. And we're getting a sense from today, I think, that you will start to see that plan being unpicked as we run up to the Conservative Party conference towards the end of this week. And you mentioned Sammy Wilson. He was already on radio this morning, again echoing much of what Boris Johnson had to say, obviously in very different language, but talking as well about Brussels now taking the upper hand in the negotiation, and he would like to see a complete change of shift in terms of the negotiation.
And thank you. The DUP MLA, Jim Wells, with us in a second or two. He's dropped off. We'll get him back. Dropped off as in not falling asleep. He's dropped off the line. Alex Kane is with us today, the political commentator. He's not here yet either. I should really just talk to myself, I guess. Start to sing. Alex, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, good morning.
Good run there, so how are you?
I'm doing okay, thank you. Well, some people will think that this is way over the top language, that even to use language of a suicide vest, which maims and kills people, and to place that into political rhetoric. Is that on, Alex?
In one sense, it's not on, but this is Boris. This is what Boris is absolutely brilliant at. He's a brilliant columnist. It's why he gets paid so much money. It's why he's always interesting to the media, because he speaks a language in which some people are uncomfortable with, but it is the language you hear at the lower ends of the party, particularly among the hardline Brexiteers who do believe that Theresa May has betrayed them, who do believe, not just as Conservative Party members, they believe that she's betraying the United Kingdom, she's betraying the referendum. So they don't want soft language, they don't want cosy, nuanced, you know, slightly ambiguous language. They want someone, and what you will hear them say is, Boris is saying exactly what every other Brexiteer is saying. And that's why he does it. And also, I think we have to bear in mind, Enda touched upon at the party conference a couple of weeks' time, there's a document coming out, I think, what their alternative is to her plan, which we'll wait the 2.5 years to see. Also, we have to bear in mind possibility. It's only a slight possibility, but certainly a possibility of a serious leadership challenge. He is lining himself up as the biggest beast in the jungle.
Jim Wells is with us now this morning. Your party colleague, Jim, supporting Boris Johnson in this language, the Prime Minister wrapping a suicide vest around the British Constitution and handing the detonator to Brussels. Are you comfortable with that language, Jim?
Well, what I would say to you is that Sammy has been one of our most enthusiastic Brexiteers and has very much led the campaign, so I certainly wouldn't criticise him. I would say about Boris is that sometimes...
Well, let's stick with the question, though. Are you comfortable with that language?
Not really, because the basic message that Boris Johnson's trying to put over is a sound one, but when he wraps it in this sort of language, it takes away from the substance of what he's trying to say. So we're discussing here the suicide vest and the detonator, when really we should be discussing the way forward for Brexit to get the EU out of the European Union. So I think at times you should temper his language, not because it's particularly offensive, but because it really overshadows what he's trying to say.
Why do you think he's used that language?
Well, I think
like suicide vests kill men, women, and children in such an indiscriminate way, including some of the armed forces who go in to countries around the world to protect people. So where does this come from?
Immediate thought is, what about the widows and orphans of those brave members of our army, armed forces who have died in places like Iraq and in Afghanistan by this method? And I think Boris Johnson should have been a bit more careful when he said it. But that doesn't take away from the overall message. But, you know, I think he needs to temper his language. And I think there'll be a few people around the country quite insulted and offended by the way in which he has wrapped the message. But still...
And yet your party colleague, Sammy Wilson, supports the words, supports the message, supports using a suicide vest in this political message.
He supports the message. I don't think he supports every word of the script. But yeah, the overall message is that we still have a long way to go before we can get out of Europe on a satisfactory basis. That Barnier is making life extraordinarily difficult for the UK government in its negotiations for very obvious reasons, because he has to make it extraordinarily difficult for the UK to leave the European Union, because if he doesn't, there may be many other countries in the queue in subsequent years trying to get out on a good basis.
Alex?
Well, I have to say, I agree with Jim in that sense. This is never language I would use. I'm uncomfortable with that use of language. I'm aware from, you know, writing in Northern Ireland about Northern Ireland politics for 35, 40 years, you have to be extraordinarily careful, Stephen. There are tens of thousands, maybe a couple of hundred thousand people now who are victims or relatives who get very, not offended in one sense, they get terribly, terribly upset by the use of language when it's brought into an argument which has got nothing to do with the, you know, suicide vests and things like that. And Jim is right. Boris and Sammy should both be aware of that. But Jim knows, particularly with Sammy, and I know with Boris, I've talked to him a couple of times during the referendum campaign. This is what he does, Stephen. He knows exactly. This is not accidental. This is not a throwaway line by Boris Johnson. This is deliberate. He has deliberately chosen to up the ante, Sunday weekend paper, knowing what's coming, knowing that the conference is a short way away, knowing that the new document is coming out in a few days' time. But he is, I think this is, putting it as blunt as Stephen, it is a leadership challenge. He's saying, look, if Theresa May is going, I am the only one that is prepared to use this language. I am the only one is prepared to call this what it is, an abject surrender, you know, a roll over, whatever you want to do. But I still think, if I'd been editor of the Mail, I would probably say, look, let's not go with that language. But he also looked at it and said, this will add, A, it'll add to the circulation, and B, it will be a talking point for the next 48 hours, which is exactly what a newspaper wants and exactly what a politician wants.
Let's move on. Alex, can you write an article for the newsletter just a couple of days ago, didn't you? And you're questioning whether Arlene Foster will survive. Why?
Well, it's not so much whether Arlene will survive. And going back to time, I remember with David Trimble, the period between 2003 and 2005, and I think Jim will know this, and Arlene herself will know it because she referenced it at the time, when I said I thought David had lost the natural political authority to lead unionism at that crucial time, because I think there were a lot of unforced errors. He wasn't always with the party. He'd made crucial mistakes during negotiation processes. He'd allowed himself to be outmaneuvered and so on. I just sense, I was going to say fear, but it isn't a fair thing. I sense that Arlene is in that position. I sense that in some ways she's more.
Why, though?
Because I think she's become a problem. I think it's quite clear that I first met Arlene over 30 years ago. I have a lot of regard for her. But something's happened in the past 2 years. She hasn't. No other way to put this, Stephen. I don't think she has actually risen to the challenge of leadership. Being a leader is not the same as it's been a minister.
But that's easy to say. To be fair to her, though, what are the examples?
Well, the example, first of all, I think we ended up with a full-blown RHI inquiry, because there was a route out of this. Back in December 2016, she had a route out of this. Sinn Féin would have bought into it. In fact, made it quite clear they would have bought into it. And a number of people in the DUP, very senior people in the DUP, told me they thought Ali would buy into this. And as one said, look, it could be a bit embarrassing for her for a couple of weeks, Alex, but at least it's Christmas, we'll get over this. You present something to the Assembly, an internal report, then you work from that. And I say Sinn Féin were not pushing for it. She refused to move in that. We ended up, as I said in the article, I'm not blaming her for the Assembly and executive collapsing in January. I'm simply saying I think that had she played it better, and I think had it been Robinson, the point I made, had it been Robinson, he would have found a way, maybe a slightly contrived way, but he would have found a way of keeping it going. Because I remember saying that if this goes down, I think I said to your programme early January 2017, if this Assembly executive goes down, it will be extraordinarily difficult to get it up again, because this is not like any other time. I think during the 2017 campaign, I think some of the throwaway lines were, to put it mildly, not helpful. I also warned, to flagged up the fact that an early Assembly election could cause problems, because we were down to 90. It was possible unions could lose the overall majority of the Assembly, which would be psychologically damaging. All of that happened, Stephen.
Well, Jim, whilst you're in the DUP, if not out in the wilderness, but you're still in it, do you think Arlene Foster still has authority within the party?
Yes, I think I didn't just say within the party, Stephen. I said across you. I said this is about leading unionism with Brexit, with demographics, with shifting sands and so on. I just thought, like Trimble, who used to describe himself as a leader of union, I said, I don't think he anymore can say I am the natural leader of unionism. That's all I'm saying about Arlene.
Well, Jim Wells, let's address first of all within the DUP. Does she have authority within the DUP? Is she ruling the roost? No one challenging her? No one betraying her? Or what?
Well, I wanted to say that she's in a very different position to David Trimble, because the vote that was taken on the Belfast Agreement, well over a third of the DUP unionist delegates voted against his position. Arlene's in a totally different position, because there's not that large body of opposition to her. Secondly, I've known Alex for 42 years, and Alex, of course, was a leading light within the Ulster Unionist Party for many years. So basically, a former leading Ulster Unionist is telling the DUP who should be its leader. And thanks, Alex.
I didn't tell him that, Jim. I didn't mention her being challenged by the DUP. I didn't mention anywhere that she should be toppled or overthrown. I simply made a general point referencing her to what they...
Well, let me get a sense, though. But let me get a sense, Jim, from you, because you know your party well. How much authority does she still have?
I've been in the party 43 years, Stephen, and I'm getting no sense whatsoever within the Assembly group that there's any attempt to unseat Arlene. I think people realise that we're coming up to an absolutely crucial part of Northern Ireland's history. We've got Brexit, we've got attempts to restore devolution, and therefore we require stability and we require experience. And the reality is that if Alex got his wish and there was a leadership contest, looking around Stormont, who could replace Arlene Foster? Who is the most capable person of doing this? And I think...
Would Sammy not fancy it?
Well, no, the person would have to lead from Stormont. I mean, it would be very, very difficult at the moment, even with the Assembly suspended, the leadership at Westminster, and a lot of the action being, albeit not at Stormont House, but at Stormont Castle. So therefore, I don't get any sense out there that there's any move against Arlene. And indeed, a lot of people think that she's going through one of the most challenging periods that any party leader could ever have faced, of course, with RHI. And therefore, there's a view that, you know, back our woman, keep behind her, because we all are going to go through this very difficult period, and the last thing we need is an upheaval of leadership change.
Patricia's in London. Hello, Patricia.
Good morning, Stephen.
Morning. Go ahead.
Well, I was just listening to your show earlier, and it really, as usual, it becomes the Boris show. I mean, Boris's language at the weekend was kind of a joke, really. But it really... It's all about Boris, and his language actually doesn't focus on the content of his article and what his actual plan for Brexit is. I mean, it's his own personal ambition. He's desperate to get into number 10. He thought he'd get in when Cameron was at number 10, and stabbed him in the back, switched from Remain to a Brexiteer, led the Brexiteers, all of which are clueless. They haven't got a clue what they're doing. I'm a Remainer. But I know people who voted for Brexit and feel completely betrayed and disillusioned with the fact that it wasn't what they voted for. It's going to affect people's freedom of movement, work, travel, education, huge impact for the peace process in the north of Ireland. And also it affects not just the people alive today, but future generations. And it affects things like NHS prescription drugs. It's across the board. And I live and have been brought up in London, and none of us know what Brexit means. You know what the impact is going to be.
Well, listen,
what the plan is.
Let's see.
Personal ambition. We know more about Boris and his personal marital woes than we do actually about his plan for Brexit.
Well, let's see what people think this morning, Patricia. Thank you, Jim Wells, Alex Kane. Always nice to talk to you.